back to All Rights Reserved, your exclusive entertainment law and law school podcast with your hosts, Kayla and Suna. Today, we are super excited because we're actually having our classmate, James Glassman, as a guest today to demystify the big law and OCI process. We asked you guys if you had any questions, and we think that James definitely went above and beyond in answering them. So let's get started.
Hey, James, thanks so much for joining us. We're super excited about this episode specifically because a lot of people have been really, you know, excited about learning more about OCI. So thank you so much for joining us. So why don't we jump in and why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your undergrad, your major, and why you wanted to come to law school?
Sure. So undergrad for me was kind of unorthodox, actually. I was in an undergrad for almost 7 years. I was in international, I was in international relations major. I focused primarily on the Middle East, and I studied Arabic and Farsi, actually, in undergrad.
No Turkish? That's like the trifecta. Then we could have, like, that could have been our thing.
They didn't,
or Hebrew.
They didn't offer.
Or Hebrew, that's true. Damn.
They didn't offer Turkish, and I didn't take Hebrew. I'm sorry. But
it's fine. I forgive you.
You know, I was there for 7 years, and I was like, I shouldn't take Hebrew because then I'm going to have to be there for 8. So, you know.
Oh, sorry. I don't blame you.
But yeah, you know, undergrad, I really had no idea what I wanted to do. And, you know, I took just about everything you could imagine. But I settled on international relations. And initially, I wanted to go on and get a master's and PhD and teach. And so law school kind of was not my first choice at all. And so in pursuit of my master's and PhD, I moved out to LA and I took a job at UCLA at the law school because they had some Islamic law scholars who taught at the law school.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I really wanted to get to know them and, you know, kind of try to schmooze my way into the program, I guess. And so I started working at UCLA Law, and the more I got to know the professors and the more I got to talk to them, the more feedback I would get, like, James, it really doesn't sound like you want to be an academic. You should go be a lawyer. And I was like, I don't want to be a lawyer. Nobody in my family really is a lawyer. Mm-hmm. You know, it just was not on my radar. And it was funny because basically one day, one of the professors got mad at me for something that I didn't do. And I ended up sending him like all of these like emails, like, I didn't do this. I promise. Like, here, look.
Discovery.
I was like, it was your publisher. I swear. And he's like, yeah, James. Okay. I'm so sorry. It was my publisher. But he was like,
good,
James, like, just go to law school, please.
Yeah. What are you doing here?
So I did. So, you know, I took a little bit more time and worked, went back to Colorado, actually, which is where I'm originally from.
Mm-hmm.
And saved up some money, took the LSAT, and here we are.
What was your job at UCLA?
I was a faculty assistant. So, you know, that's, you can do all kinds of things as a faculty assistant. Anything from, hey, you know, plan this event to, hey, copy this to, hey, edit my law review article for me. So I got a lot of different, there was a lot of diversity in what I did. And it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I had really great coworkers. And I highly recommend to anybody who's interested in law school to try to get an administrative job at a law school, because you'll have plenty of opportunities to talk to people and get an idea if it's a good fit for you.
That's really good advice. I don't think I've ever like thought about that before. I think I always hear, oh, you should work at a law firm before law school, but not at a law school, but that totally makes sense. So I just love that, like, your pivot into law is awesome. So when you were applying to these schools, like, you know, after you took your LSAT and stuff, did you kind of have an area that you were interested in, or were you kind of just going in blind and like hoping to figure it out eventually?
Yeah. So, you know, when I applied to law school, I mentioned I was in undergrad for 7 years. My GPA was atrocious. Actually, my undergrad GPA was terrible. So, I knew I wanted to be in LA. And so I applied to Southwestern and I applied to Loyola, and that was it. I knew that I was interested in crim law. And I knew that LA was a hub, I guess, for these huge law firms, and that it had just a really competitive civil litigation market. So, you know, I was open to both, but I was definitely interested in crim law, I think, initially.
So just out of curiosity, why didn't you want to apply to UCLA? If you had worked there, you knew people there, did you not want to apply there, or what's the story behind that?
Honestly, I think with my GPA, I just knew I wouldn't get in. But at the same time, while I was there, I think it has just a very different culture than Southwestern too. Mm. It's much more competitive. It's less, I think, yeah, cooperative. And so one of the things that I really liked about Southwestern was that, you know, it's kind of like a family here and everybody kind of looks out for each other. And, you know, that's definitely been instrumental too in my path to big law is that kind of relationship building and people looking out for you. So.
Yeah, I love that. I didn't know that actually, because you always hear like, oh, you should go to UCLA or USC, especially like if you want to do entertainment like we do. But I think I definitely agree with Southwestern. It's a very collaborative environment. And I also feel that we have a lot of unique resources that maybe other schools might not have. So I think that that's a great point. And sometimes rankings don't matter, even though we're always like stressed about it when we're like applying to school and everything.
Yeah. I mean, you know, rankings definitely play a role, I think, in perhaps maybe how many big firms come mm-hmm. to your school.
Yeah.
You know, but ultimately, I have numerous people that I know from Southwestern who've gotten jobs at big firms all over the country. So it's right. Definitely possible. Yeah.
That's awesome. That is so cool. So after 1L, when you're gearing up to, you know, apply for the 2L summer associate positions and do OCI, which is on-campus interviewing for those who don't know, what mindset did you have when you were going into it? And like, what kind of credentials did you have and kind of how did you prepare? Like, how did it go? Like, what was your experience?
Yeah. So, that summer between 1 and 2L, I actually had worked at the district attorney's office because, like I said, I was interested in crim law. And, you know, I had a great time and I really enjoyed it. But, there just wasn't a lot of writing. And I've always loved to write. And so I think that's really what had me kind of pivot into this big law path. And so when I was applying, my credentials were, let's see, I think I had over a 4.0, I think, at the time. I know Southwestern doesn't.
Damn. That is for James. That's awesome. Seriously.
Thank you. But yeah, I know Southwestern is unique in that way. I know a lot of other schools don't give like a 4.3 weight for an A+, but Southwestern nice. Does. Yeah. So I had over a 4.0. I had probably about 5 years almost of work experience going into it. Mm-hmm. As I said, I worked at UCLA for a little while, which I think helped. But I also worked at a 911 tech company for about almost 4 years. Wow. And while I was there, you know, I got some leadership experience. And I think importantly too, I worked a lot with customers and like big company customers. Like I worked with Verizon and AT&T.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
And yeah. And so I think having that experience really helped me too with this. And it, you know, it proved that I have, I can be employable, I guess. And it also, I think showed that you have a customer service mindset, which is actually something that I think a lot of people don't think about when they think of Big Law, is that, you know, a lot of what you do is customer relations, customer management in Big Law, in addition to, of course, you know, being a lawyer.
That's so true.
See, I didn't have any internships in college, actually. And yeah, other than the DA, I didn't really have any internships to speak of. But, you know, I think at that point, because it was in, I want to say August, I got my offer to be on Law Review, which I think is super, super important. Anybody that wants to work at a big firm, you know, either Law Review or if your school has some kind of law journal, I think some kind of honors writing program is critical. And I think at that point, I hadn't gotten an offer to be on the moot court team yet. You know, but I think any other kind of honors program or intramural is awesome because, you know, especially like Kayla, I know you do negotiation honors program and that is so critical, having negotiation skills in civil litigation. So,
right.
You know, any kind of honors program I think would help. But yeah, that's, I think, about where I was at.
Yeah, that's awesome. And like, how many, do you remember how many firms you applied for through OCI through our school?
Oh, a ton. You know, probably more than 10. I would say at least eight of them were resume collect firms.
Mm-hmm. So was it through the school or was it, you know, by like on your own? Was it the school that actually, you know, gave these 8 firms for you to apply to?
Yeah. So it was all posted on the OCI page and it was all in one place. And, you know, every single firm pretty much required a cover letter, resume, writing sample. I think that's pretty much all they required, but you know, most of them were resume collects. And, I didn't have luck with that though. The firms that I got interviews with were the ones who were scheduled to actually come to Southwestern's campus.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I had that too. I did OCI like just for honestly, like 2 firms through Simplicity. And then my advisor was sending me other firms to apply through their website because they had more like intellectual property practices and stuff. But yeah, I think the resume collects are 50-50 because I've applied to some entertainment jobs through our OCI with like resume collects. And, like I've never heard back from them either. So
yeah. Fun. Yeah. Kelsey Finn, who was a 3L last year, just graduated and just passed the bar. She got a job through a resume collect at McGuire Woods, which is a big firm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an East Coast firm who I think just recently opened up an LA office or something like that. But so it's definitely not possible. They're not impossible.
Yeah.
You know, that 50-50 thing, I think you said it. It's exactly correct. Yeah.
You just have to try. I feel like, you know, can't hurt.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think as long as, you know, some firms say top 10% is the cutoff, which in my experience is pretty true. You know, but at some schools, like I know at USC and UCLA, you know, firms will even take, you know, top 20, 30% too. So yeah, I mean, it's flexible, I think.
I think that's where ranking kind of comes into play. Cause like, if you go to Harvard Law, you probably don't have to be in the top 10% of your class.
Yeah, you can be like top 80.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly though.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's super true. I mean, it's you know, where you go to school, I think matters in terms of like maybe where you're placed in your class.
Yeah.
Right. But also in, you know, as I mentioned, how many people actually come to the school, how many firms actually come to the school.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, for me, I was not even close to top 10, top 20. So I didn't even bother with OCI, which is actually unfortunate, but I guess that's what happens when, you know, you have such good grades. So just going back to the grades a little bit, you did mention that you weren't so successful with your grades in undergrad. So what do you think made that difference, you know, going from an undergrad with not such fantastic grades to literally being at the top of our law school?
You know, I think it was a couple different things. In undergrad, I didn't really want to be there. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, my dad never went to college. And so his one and only goal for me was to go to college. And so there was no choice. It was you go to college or you get out of my house, basically.
Oh, damn.
yeah. So, you know, I just didn't really want to be there in undergrad. And, but, you know, in the end, the last few years, I turned it around and did really well, but it wasn't enough to salvage my GPA. But yeah, you know, I think having time off too after college really made a big difference for me because, you know, I'm 31 now and, you know, this is it for me. It's like, you know, you do it now or you just don't, you know, I'm not going to have another chance.
Yeah. You're so young still.
You are though. That's the thing. But I feel like when it's the time when you're making these decisions, it feels like you're old. Like I was worried mm-hmm. that if I took 3 years off versus 2 years off, I would be so behind. But
yeah,
you know, I worked for 3 years, 3.5 years, and then I started law school and everything is fine. Like gotten all the experience I wanted. Hopefully we'll land that job in the music industry upon graduation. But I think that in your 20s, when you're making big decisions like that, it just feels overwhelming and like, oh my God, this better be the right one.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, but I think my age really did kind of help me when I was here just because it's, you kind of have perspective too in that.
Oh yeah.
You know, I worked, you know, 40, 60 hour weeks for like $30,000 a year. And, you know,
man.
The best way to avoid doing that is to do well. And so I kind of have that motivating force too.
No, that's a good point. That's a good way to think about it. And also when you in my experience, like going from having a real job where your mistakes can like really have big consequences, when you go into law school and your only job is to learn things, it's just a different mindset. And I think it comes with, you know, working brings you in with a different level of emotional maturity that I feel like makes you better equipped to handle law school because law school is stressful, but I still like, I worked in real estate for 2 years, hated it. It was like, nothing will ever be as bad as that. Like that's my reference point instead of like undergrad, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, exactly. I couldn't agree more. I worked in 911 tech. And if I messed something up, people could die. And so it was.
Oh, no pressure.
No,
that's
yeah.
Insane.
So, you know, I mean, law school, definitely stressful, definitely a lot of work. But yeah, I mean, it gives you perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's jump into, you know, okay, you did the OCI experience, you applied and whatnot. Why don't you tell us about your summer at Sheppard Mullin and, you know, receiving the acceptance and, you know, yeah, starting
like
your job
process.
There.
Must have been very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing was kind of a whirlwind. I would say in August, I got an email just saying, hey, like, you know, we'd love to meet with you on campus. We'd love to talk to you, you know. Then I'd meet, I forget exactly who all I met with, but I met with like my career counselor and all that stuff just to make sure I didn't choke. And I went into the interview, and you know, it was just a pretty simple, straightforward, like, this is exactly what mm-hmm. you would expect from a job interview kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
You know, it was just a one-on-one with me and, like, I think he was a partner or something. And he, you know, was kind of older and formal mm-hmm. and was just like, hey, you know, tell me about this experience on your resume. Yeah. If tell me about a time that you had a difficult coworker, or, you know, about a time where you disagreed with your boss, you know, just stuff like that.
Yeah, straightforward.
And then I think, like, the critical thing about the interviews for Big Law is that you know so much about the person interviewing you that when they say, do you have any questions for us? Your answer is not no.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Or just, like, not, like, scripted and, yeah. and stupid, right?
What,
like,
did you ask?
I mean, so this guy was a former district attorney, mm-hmm. You know, and because I was interested in crim law, you know, I talked to him about that. I said, so, you know, why did you transition from crim law into Shepherd? Why did you pick Shepherd? You know, and his answer was pretty clear. It was that, you know, there's so much great training there, and that the firm is just really kind of a tight-knit group of people who really actually care about each other. And, you know, he was a Southwestern alum too. And so we kind of talked about how we had that same experience kind of at Southwestern too. You know, and so it's knowing enough about somebody that you can have a conversation with them, mm-hmm. but not knowing so much about them that it's like, you know,
it's like creepy.
Yeah.
No, you do your due diligence and, you know, call it a day. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and then after that, you know, you wait, excruciating, but you wait like a week, and then you hear if you get a call back.
The worst.
It's so bad. But, you know, I got the call, and, you know, he said, hey, we really liked you. We'd love to come, have you come into the firm and interview with some more people and, see if we can make you an offer. And so, you know, before the call back, I just wanted to make sure I did absolutely everything I could possibly do to prepare. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in advance, they sent me my attorneys who would be interviewing me. So I, of course, you know, looked at their bios, you know, I looked them up on LinkedIn, you know, and a lot of times you can go on Lexis or Westlaw too and look up a specific attorney to see kind of what cases they've been working on.
Oh yeah, I've done that. I did that.
So smart.
I did that when I was preparing for my litigation clerkship interview because I knew nothing about litigation, but I knew the partners that I was interviewing with were obvious. I mean, it was a litigation firm and they've done a lot of, like, right of privacy and publicity stuff. So I was like, oh my God, okay, I need to, like, know something. And Lexis is the best. Yeah, that was something that my career advisor told me at school when I told her about that interview because I was nervous. So I was like, all I know is, like, contract drafting. Like, what do I do?
Amazing.
Yeah, and that's definitely a really good tip, and I don't think that it's talked about enough.
It's not, you know, and a great example that came out of that is, you know, as I mentioned, I worked in the 911 tech industry. And one of my company's smaller clients was a client of one of the partners who I interviewed with. And I never would have known that if I hadn't looked on Westlaw and found that he recently did a case for them. And he said, oh yeah, you know, this company is one of my bigger clients. Uh-huh. And, you know, we talked about that, and that was just a great opportunity then for us to bond. You know, so it, I think knowing enough about them just mm-hmm. shows initiative and shows that you really care about working at that firm, not just that you want mm-hmm. to go into Big Law, right. Which I think is important.
Yeah, that's a good distinction. So my question about that, though, is, like, how do you bring that up? Like, hey, I noticed you have this client or whatever without sounding creepy or, like, awkward. Because I feel like that would be my challenge, would be like, okay, I know all this information and I want to show that I did the work, but I also don't want it to come off as, like, too rehearsed or too just, like, weird.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. It's really tough. You know, I think the mindset you kind of have to have going in there is just that it's a conversation and not an interview, right? And so it's like, if it's something that you probably wouldn't bring up with a friend, you know, like you don't want your friend to know that you like stalked them on Facebook or Instagram, and you're like, yeah, hey, I saw that 2013 post when you went to Cabo, like, tell me more about that, you know. Like, you would never say that to a friend. And so when you're in your interview, you know, you might not want to say, hey, I saw that 2013 case that you lost. Like,
yeah, that's probably not going to fly.
No, but you know what? If there's a case that they won, and if there's like a published opinion that came out of it, ask them about it, because I guarantee you they're proud of it. They're proud of it for sure.
That's great. In my experience, I've always, like, you know, just from doing interviews and getting the job, I've like always noticed that if I make the interview about them, they end up loving me even more. It's like, you actually have to like switch up the interview and make it about them, and they won't even realize that you're like subconsciously doing that, so they like you more. I don't know. Have you done that? Like, do you think that like kind of switching the tone to make it about them could actually be beneficial?
100%. Because everybody loves talking about themselves.
Yep.
And if you can get somebody to talk about themselves, they will absolutely love you. And so, yeah, you know, I mean, and that's the thing. That's, you know, during my callback, you know, which I'll tell you a little bit about the structure of it in a minute. But during my callback, almost every single interview so each one was about 30 minutes, and almost every single one was 15 minutes of questions from them to me. And then 15 minutes of, well, you're stuck with me for 15 more minutes. What do you want to talk about? Kind of thing.
No pressure.
Well, and that's the time. That's like, that's when you say, hey, I see that you work in maybe the insurance practice group. Tell me about that. Why did you pick insurance law? Because that just doesn't seem like something that somebody would voluntarily choose or something, you know? Yeah. And
so true.
Yeah. And ask them and let them kind of bring up something else. And if they bring up something else that touches on something that you have information about, you know, I mean, as long as it's not some creepy trip to Cabo in 2013, like, I'm sure you're fine. You can probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the actual OCI process, though, the callback process is nuts. So we were still doing everything in person, of course, at this point, back in August of 2019. And so, you know, I went into the firm and I had 4 30-minute interviews. The very first one was with the hiring partner. The second one was with a junior associate. The third one was with another partner. And then my last one was with a senior associate.
Wow.
So, you know, I from what I've heard from most people, firms typically like to mix partners and associates rather than, you know, all partners.
I think it's a culture fit thing. Like, they want to test whether your personality is going to mesh well with everyone who works there.
It is 100%. And so then after that, then you have a dinner typically. And you go out to a fancy restaurant. We went to Odium. I don't know. It's downtown. It's like super famous chef who was on like a cooking show.
Yeah, one of those fancy places downtown. Oh yeah. The other thing is because like
I did not know that this is a thing.
I've heard stories of like whether you should, if everyone's drinking, should you drink or like don't order too many things. Like I just remember like looking up what these big law interview processes were like. And the meal was always the thing that was most asked about because it's a casual setting, but it's also not a casual setting because you're technically interviewing still.
But like, but like if they take you out to dinner, doesn't that mean that you get the job? Like that doesn't make sense.
No, I think it's standard. Why would that be part of the
interview?
Well, they want to see if, like, what you're going to be like when you let your guard down, probably.
Wow. I had no idea about this part. That's so interesting. Tell us more.
Yeah, the dinner is exactly like what you said, Suna. It's an interview that's casual and also supposed to be like kind of fun, right? So, you know, they're trying to see what you're like with your guard down. You know, this whole drink, no drink thing. I mean, I actually got advice from an alum that said, do not drink. Just tell them you have other stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably a good rule of thumb,
to be honest.
And it was actually true. So I did have stuff I had to do later that night. But, you know, I think it's fine to, you know, if they order a drink, have a drink, but, you know, don't get out of hand.
Don't get sloppy.
No. Like two drink max, like don't let yourself get even tipsy, you know, just enjoy yourself. But the dinner was great. You know, I went with a senior associate and a junior associate. You know, we just talked about not really work, talked about cooking shows and sports and, you know, Colorado, all kinds of stuff, you know, and so it really wasn't too much about the firm. It was just kind of like having lunch or dinner with some friends. And so it was really nice. And then, yeah, after that, you know, it's another excruciating wait to see if you get the job. But after the fact, what I got told about these interviews is that every single person kind of goes in with the mindset of two things. One, is this somebody who I want to have a beer with after work? And two, is this somebody who I want sitting across from me on a Saturday at midnight trying to finish a brief that's due on Monday?
Yeah. It's so important that you like each other. I mean,
yeah.
That would really suck if you didn't.
It is. And you know, these interviews are, these callback interviews specifically, are much more about fit and whether they think you'll really get along with people at the firm and fit into the culture than it is about your credentials. Nobody cares at that point, you know, if you're top 10%, if you're, you know, on law review. Like once you've got the callback, you're qualified, and now they just want to tell if you have the personality that they're looking for.
That's great though, because I feel like when it comes to, you know, like big law, it feels like this big intimidating thing, and everyone always emphasizes grades and extracurriculars and past experience when they never talk about what you just told us, which I think is equally if not more important than, you know, grades. I mean, grades are will kind of like get your foot in the door, but at the end of the day, they have to like you.
Definitely.
So nerve-wracking, man. So nerve-wracking.
It is. And then the actual summer program itself, you know, I'm really grateful that Shepherd still went through with their program.
Yeah, because at this point, the pandemic was in full swing.
It was.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, there was a
lot about the pandemic.
I forgot that 2L summer was online. Yeah, it's so true. So did you start later or did you start on time?
Yeah, they pushed us back. You know, Erica Jansen, who is an evening student here who also got a big law job over the summer, she actually started like right on time. But yeah, Shepherd, I think, was really hopeful that we might be able to do it in person again. But I think once they realized that that wasn't going to happen, they still decided to do it, which I'm very grateful for. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we had kind of a shorter program. It was 5 instead of 10 weeks. And it was all on Zoom.
Wow.
So it was an interesting experience. You know, sometimes they would joke that, you know, typically during your summer program, they like to wine and dine you. And because they couldn't do it this year, instead of wine, they gave us work. And instead of dine, they gave us more work. So it was,
No,
no, but you know what?
What were your hours like?
Just like eight to five or whatever. Nothing.
Oh, okay. I mean,
during the summer, they do not ever want people working more than 40 hours a week. And it's, you know, they definitely want you to have a pleasant experience and they want you to want to come back, of course, you know, so you definitely are not going to be given so much work that you, you know, just have a miserable summer. And I didn't at all. You know, the reason they would joke about that is just because typically, you know, they'll schedule like a trip for us to go to like Catalina together or, yeah, or like to the Malibu wine, safari thing.
All the perks.
And all those things.
So my question is a little more about what your work looked like, because I know that when you're going into big law, sometimes like the summer associates can prefer a certain practice group, but there are some practice groups that typically won't take summer associates, like the entertainment and media practice groups tend to be that way at all the big law firms, which I unfortunately had to find out. But what kind of things were you working on? And were those the topics or areas that you had been interested in, or did they kind of just like give you a combination of stuff?
Yeah, so I definitely had a combination of stuff, but right before the program started, they asked us, hey, you know, you applied to be in the litigation division, I guess, and what are your interests? And so I just sent them some things that I was generally interested in. And then I got a mix of stuff from that. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah,
what had told them you were interested in?
So I told them I was really interested in securities law and white collar crime defense.
Nice.
Yeah. And it was great.
That's,
I mean, that's
fun.
That's all I did all summer. Really is I got to work on that. You know, but I also got to work on some really cool pro bono cases too. You know, we did something that was like a total matter of first impression. And so we got to make some like cool policy arguments. You know, I got to work on a pro bono thing with Georgetown University that was doing a study on qualified immunity and police.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, I got to do all kinds of cool stuff.
That's so interesting. And so would you say the bulk of the work was doing like the research memos or drafting briefs or complaints, like, or pleadings, I guess? What do you think you ended up doing more, and what do you enjoy doing the most? Because I think that litigation it involves a lot of writing, but there's always something you prefer than, you know, not to, like, I don't like research memos, but I can do them, but I really like writing complaints and also, desist letters, because you can get really sassy.
Yeah. I mean, so most of the work I did was, writing based. You know, they'd give me a research question and say, hey, just give me a short memo on this. You know, and honestly, like, that's the reason I pivoted to big law, is so I could do writing. And so that's really what I enjoyed, you know. But I also got some other like research tasks, like, hey, here's a certain issue, like, go shepherdize, or, you know, key cite or whatever, every single case that's come out since 2008 on this topic, and, you know, give me a summary of the case if it's relevant. And, you know, so I had some of that, but then I also had some, you know, hey, go look up all these police departments regulations and, you know, put it into an Excel sheet for me.
Yeah.
Or, hey, here's somebody's demurrer, like, go read every case that they cited and tell me how they are distinguishable and why they're wrong.
I had one like that. Cool. It was like an emotion to dismiss it was motion for summary judgment, and it was a copyright case, and they cited like 40 cases, and I had to go into each one and be like, okay, this is what we can counter for this argument because they cited to this, but that's not what the case says. Like, fun times.
It was. And
I love litigation.
Same.
There's so much to do in litigation. There's so much. It's so, like, I hate transactional law. I don't hate it. Okay. I don't hate it. But, like, after, like, making the transition from transactional to litigation, I'm like, wow, there are so many, I'm never bored. There are so many different things you can do. I love drafting complaints. I'm constantly doing like random reply briefs and stuff like that. So I love it too, really.
Yeah, there's so much you can do. And I was very fortunate, you know, especially, and I think this spoke volumes to me about Shepherd. You know, it was right in the middle of the pandemic, and these attorneys, you know, were, and their clients are, you know, their clients don't want to pay for stuff, and their clients don't want to send work if they can avoid it. And so even though the stream of work, I think, was slower, Shepherd and these attorneys who were maybe not going to hit all their hours for the year still gave us work and still wanted us to be able to, to have that experience. And so
that's really, really nice, because I feel like with the pandemic, you definitely see a company's true colors. Like when the shutdown happened, I was interning at Universal, and even though they had to suspend the internship program, they still paid us as if we were going to be there the entire time. And they gave us some extra money. And I was like, that's just like a really
nice
thing to do, you know, as opposed to like, you heard about a lot of companies just canceling their summer internships and associate positions and everything. And it's like, I think one question, actually, speaking of interview questions to ask them when you're done, is to ask them how they handled the pandemic. Like, how did, you know, did they have to lay off a lot of people, or how did they treat working from home? Like that kind of stuff. Because I think at that point, it's pretty relevant for someone who's considering working for you, how you're going to treat them when everything goes south.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, and Shepherd, I think, just came through with flying colors on that. They Yeah, I mean, they did everything they possibly could to help us have a really meaningful experience, you know, and sometimes they would send us DoorDash gift cards to like hang out with somebody at the firm on Zoom and have lunch, or they sent us like this whole like tiki party box thing.
Cute.
And they had like a tiki party with like trivia and karaoke.
Oh, that's so fun. I love that.
I did something like that at Viacom. They like, we had like boba workshops, and we did like a tie-dye painting thing, so that was really fun. So James, I actually have another question about, you know, your summer there. So how many other students were like also summer associates, were any from Southwestern, or, you know, where did they come from and how many were there?
Yeah. So, you know, I think one of the benefits of being on Zoom was that I actually got to meet the entire summer class across the country. Nice.
Across the country. Oh, yeah. Cool. How much, like, would you say there's like 100 or 50? Like, I honestly have no idea.
I think it was about 50. Yeah.
That's competitive.
Yeah.
So competitive. Like, congratulations. Yes. You made it there.
He's a good person to know, Suna.
Apparently, yeah. Well, that's why he's on this podcast, obviously.
Oh my God.
I mean,
amazing.
It was great though to get to know them. You know, there was in the LA office specifically, which is where I worked, there were six of us, I believe. I want to say, I think we were the biggest class because the LA office is like the heart of the firm. There were, I think, three students from USC. There was one from Hastings, me from Southwestern, and I want to say the other was from UCLA. I'm 90% sure she was from UCLA. I should know this, but it was either UCLA or UCI. I don't remember, but
yeah.
So it was all local. It was all local, and you know, we're still in touch. We still talk, and you know, hopefully soon we can all actually meet each other.
Yeah. But did all of you get offers to join upon graduation? I'm not sure how that works.
So unfortunately, no. There was one who didn't, which is typically pretty rare. You know, and I think we were all kind of sad, but it's at the same time, you know, if somebody just isn't really a good fit for the firm, mm-hmm. you know, it's, that's what happened. And I think it became pretty apparent to us and to just really everybody at the firm that this, mm-hmm. this individual just wasn't going to be a good fit. And mm. so, wow. but yeah, I mean, I would say it's pretty rare. Like, yeah. you know, typically people say you have to mess up like really bad to not get an offer. But yeah, I mean, it's rare, but it happens.
Yeah. It could have also been maybe like a budget consideration since the summer associate class was much bigger than it normally is. Like maybe they only had enough budget to offer a certain number of positions. I don't know. I haven't done big law, so I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm in the dark.
I can't imagine that's, mm-hmm. that was it. You know, most of these big firms just have so much money that.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
They always say too, you know, that the summer associates are the future of the program mm-hmm. and the future of the yeah. firm. And so they, I don't think they would have done that,
yeah.
you know, in good times or bad. So it, yeah, I don't mm-hmm. know.
Yeah. So do you think you'll, you know, be in big law, not forever, but for the foreseeable future, you found what you really enjoy?
Yeah. So great. I'll be working in their business trials practice group.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah. And they have a ton of diversity there too. I mean, mm-hmm. it's, you can do insurance litigation, you can do securities law, you can do contract stuff, you can do whatever. So yeah, I mean, I was really drawn, I think, to that group mm-hmm. for that reason. Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the plan. You know, I hope to work there for the foreseeable future. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things that sets people apart during their interviews too, is that mm-hmm. you like clearly show that you want to be a partner at the firm and you've thought yeah. about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Shepherd, I think is great. You know, almost, I would say everybody who is really invested in the firm makes partner before their eighth or even 10th year.
Nice.
So, you know, it's a great place to be, and I'm excited to hopefully get there.
Amazing.
Oh, we're so proud of you, and we know that you will get there. I have no doubt in my mind. You're like one of the smartest people that I know, so.
Yeah, it's true.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate that.
So, obviously, your success story is awesome. And we have a lot of listeners who are currently in law school or about to start law school. And do you have any advice for law students looking to get into big law or even just do well in school, since obviously you've also done very well for yourself in law school?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the best things that I did was take time off and, mm-hmm. you know, between undergrad and law school. And I think that that was beneficial both, as I described earlier, because mm-hmm. it kind of gave me that drive to keep my grades up when, you know, it's midnight and I'd rather just pass out rather than, you know, read another case or two. You know, it was that reminder of like, man, I really hated my cubicle job mm-hmm. that kept me going
yep.
up until, you know, 2 in the yeah. morning sometimes.
Wow. To see, you know, like, I can't do that. My brain shuts off after about 10 p.m. Like, I can't same. Do, I'm not a night owl at all.
You know, I'm not really either, but sometimes you just got to do it.
Yep. Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, my advice is for the people who haven't started law school yet but are, like, considering it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you haven't worked a crappy job, go do it. You know, it'll make you a better person. And
yeah.
You know, it'll probably help you, later on too.
Yeah.
And
humble you a little bit.
If it can be a customer service job, even better, because, mm-hmm. customer service is a huge thing in big law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't think about it, but that's all you do as a partner basically is customer management.
Right.
So yeah. Being able to sell the firm and sell your services, you know, it's very important. So, you know, yeah, if you haven't gotten any work experience, that would be my advice, is to just mm-hmm. take a year or two off and do it. And then, yeah, once you're in law school, you know, I mean, I think it's really important that you stay in the top 10%. If you want to be in big law and, you know, go for law review, go for a law journal, go for an honors program, it is hard to keep your grades up too. You know, I'm not going to lie. It's a lot of pressure. If you do really well your first semester, it's a lot of pressure to keep them up. And one thing that I see consistently is, you know, I've worked as a TA too for a year and a half now. And one thing I consistently see with 1Ls is you'll see people do really well first semester. And then they'll say, oh, law school is not as scary as I thought. And they'll kind of take their foot off the gas.
Right.
And then they'll tune second semester. And then they won't get that big law job. And so, you know, if you do well first semester, keep your foot on the gas, because everyone else who didn't do as well first semester is trying twice as hard now. So
yeah, that was me. I didn't do that well in my first semester, and my grades were much better second semester and significantly better 2L, but that's another story. But yeah, you're so right about that. And it really does make such a big difference. I don't really feel like a lot of people from Southwestern were able to secure a big law job. So I think it's really important in terms of, you know, having high grades and stuff like that, which is kind of unfortunate sometimes, because, you know, some people could be really good fits for firms and maybe they just had a bad semester or something, but
yeah,
it's all relative.
You're so right, because honestly, I came out of undergrad with F's on my transcript and D's and C's. You know, yeah. So grades, you know, at to some extent for big law are a must, you know, but they're definitely not a measure of your worth or what you're capable of by any means. So, you know, also first semester, like I didn't do very well in my legal writing class actually. And so I thought, man, I'm screwed. I'm never going to get this job. But I made sure that my second semester was an A or an A plus, and that's what I got. And I was like, you know what? Now I have a story of how I learned and made it better. So,
and you put in the work, like, amazing. And it showed. Yeah.
Yeah. So don't count yourself out for sure. Like if you don't do as well as you hoped first semester, just keep pushing forward and do everything that you possibly can to get yourself in the top 10%. So
would you agree ethically? Yes. I think that is. Yeah. Would you agree that in order to do well in law school or, you know, do well at a job or in anything really, you have to sort of be very honest with yourself and not shy away from criticism, because, you know, without knowing what you need to work on, you're never going to get better.
Yeah, 100%.
You got to get very humble.
You do. And, you know, I think one of the best things I did in law school was extern for a judge. And I remember telling one of her clerks, I handed him a memo that I had just written. And I said, Alex, this is my last chance to get feedback from you. I said, tear it to shreds, be brutal, hold nothing back.
I love that.
And he did, you know, and it was like probably one of the best learning experiences I had, though, is just having somebody just really give you tough advice and tough feedback. But, you know, that's how you learn and grow.
Yeah, so. I love that. That's so important to remember, I think.
It is.
Okay, James, I have one more question for you, and that is, what has been your most rewarding experience in law school so far?
That is a tough question, because law school has been a very rewarding experience overall, but I think there have been two things that really stood out. I think the first is moot court. Last year went to a constitutional law competition at William and Mary Law School in Virginia. And we made it, I think, to the semifinals or something like that. And, you know, at this point now they've got all their best judges at the competition. And so I actually had a panel of two Virginia state Supreme Court justices, several.
Kidding. Wow.
No, no.
Wow. That's scary.
Several. Oh, it was so cool though. Several appellate, state appellate court judges, a couple federal district court judges. And so I had a panel of nine judges. And I got to argue my whole case, and it was so much fun. And it was probably one of the best rounds I had ever had too.
Wow.
So
you were probably on adrenaline.
Yeah.
You're probably so like, oh my God, that's so cool.
Oh,
what was the topic? I'm just curious.
Oh, it's so boring. And I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to your listeners. I'm so sorry. I won't.
What is it?
I won't explain anything about it, but it was campaign finance regulation.
Oh, okay. Oh. Well, that's a really relevant subject, though.
It is, sure,
yeah.
But
it's,
yeah. But I'm not going to admit that I actually am interested in that. There's no way.
I mean, it touches on a lot of First Amendment issues, but mm-hmm. it's kind of a snooze fest. Not going to lie, but. That was such an amazing experience, you know, and then getting up and talking to the judges afterwards. And, you know, I had a Virginia Supreme Court justice shake my hand and say,
wow,
you know, I would be honored to have you in my courtroom. I was like, that's so cool.
Oh my God. I love
it. Oh my God.
That's awesome. That is so cool. That's such a great compliment too, especially to get as a law student, you know, wanting to go into like litigation.
It is. And wow. So, you know, that was really hard to top, but I think maybe something did. And last year I got to work for a Ninth Circuit judge, and I got the opportunity to work on a bunch of different bench memos, which mm-hmm. basically you just take the briefs and the record and you kind of distill it down to mm-hmm. a recommendation. To the judges.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, that was just such a great experience because it really changed how I look at everything, seeing mm-hmm. lawyering from the other side of the curtain and seeing who is a good lawyer, who's a bad lawyer, what you should do, what you shouldn't do. You know, and our judge was so nice. She would let us have lunch with her every single day.
Oh, wow.
We can talk to her about anything, you know, and her clerks were so nice too. And, you know, like I said, I just asked them to tear mm-hmm. my work up and they would, and I learned so much.
That's amazing. That. Did you work on anything copyright related? Cause the Ninth Circuit is big on copyright law.
I did not directly, but I did see a lot of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And my judge really likes that kind of work too.
Oh, cool.
And so she likes, yeah, she always tries to get those cases if she can.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was such a great experience that I think just changed me and my career for the better. Mm-hmm. You know, but It's hard, you know, that moot court round was so cool.
Is very cool. I mean, honestly, it just sounds like you literally made the most of your law school experience and you have these great stories to tell and this great experience. And I feel like anyone who's listening is like, wow, I want to be James.
Who doesn't?
Honestly.
I mean, one thing I will caution, one word of caution, I guess, mm-hmm. is, you know, during 2L, especially if you do well during 1L, you're going to get a lot of opportunities mm-hmm. to be a TA, you know, a research assistant, to, you know, be a tutor, to be an advisor, a mentor, to be mm-hmm. on this program and that program. And, you know, make sure you say no sometimes.
That's a very important skill. I agree.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because if you overpromise yourself, you're not going to do a good job, and you're going to kind of, you know, lose out on the amazing opportunities that you're being offered.
Mm-hmm. So, I feel like it really impacts your mental health too, taking on so much stuff. Like, yeah, 2L was rough for me, but I learned to say no to things. So that was good.
Yeah. You know, and that's my only word of caution, I guess, mm-hmm. is that, you know, there are so many wonderful opportunities, but just make sure that you are smart about which ones you accept.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, thank you so much for making the time to come and be a guest on our podcast. I'm sure our listeners really enjoyed this episode. I just like talking to you because you're just so nice and like knowledgeable and like we just have a good, you know, good conversation. So I had a great time.
So did I. Thank you so much. Yes. It really brings me back to when we were in classes together during 1L. And I truly do miss it, but hopefully someday in the courtroom. Just kidding, but not really.
Hey, I mean, if you keep writing complaints one day or another, you're going to come up against the defense attorney and it might be me.
So. There you go.
Thank you guys for having me back. And it's great to see you both again. And Kayla, I'm really glad that I get to see you and that you don't have to stare at the back of my head like you did in class every day during 1L. So sorry about that.
There we go.
It's nice to see your face.
I love
it. It's nice to see your face. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Likewise. Likewise.
That was so fun. I think he was such a fantastic guest and I'm so glad that he was able to join us.
Me too. I learned a lot actually about interviewing, which I mean, I loved that. That was very, very informative. And we hope that you guys learned as much as we did.
Yeah. I mean, I had no idea that this dinner party thing was a thing and you know what? We learn things. We learn new things all day, but
all day. Every day.
We really hope that you enjoyed this episode. Yeah. And thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you guys. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.